have is my next guest with me, which is Adam Shaw. Adam Shaw is a stress management coach who develops with people's pitching, business ideas. If you need to pitch an entrepreneurial idea, so, you know, if you've got like a Dragon Den idea and you're going on to that show, Adam Shaw is probably the right person to speak to beforehand. So then you can get someone like Mr. Jones or one of the other sort of Dragon Den hosts to say, yes, we will happily invest 50 grand for 20% of business in equity in your business, whatever the figures are. He is really good at that. So I have Adam Shaw with me at the moment. Adam, welcome to the show at Punjab Radio. And I would like to touch just initially about this 60-second rule that they've had during the FA Cup, where they've said that at the start of the game there'll be a 60-second delay to raise mental health awareness around people. Now, the question sometimes is, are we as people a little bit soft in the 21st century? Do we need to be a bit more toughened up? Or there really is an issue with people these days, being a stress management coach?
That's a really good question, Monty. I do think that it's something that needs to be a lot more out there. A lot of stress is caused, a lot of physical and mental illness is caused because people don't talk about it. We all think, especially guys, they're far more likely to suffer it because they won't share their problems. They don't want to tell anyone that they're not doing 100%, and people can hide from it. And just offering this avenue for people to discuss it, I think it's a great first step. I think it's great.
Okay, so you do agree, you are a big advocate on what the FA are doing, you know, just giving that sort of 16-second delay so everyone can just have that awareness of saying, look, if you facing some sort of difficulty, just talk to someone.
Yeah, making it normal to talk, because I think a lot of people think that maybe they're going to a psychotherapist or they need, you know, a shrink, and maybe they're not right in the head. And here's the news bulletin, none of us are right in the head.
Yeah, we all got some sort of problem, and it's just, I sometimes feel that we're just a little bit soft these days on ourselves. Yeah. Like, we never used to talk about these sort of things, let's say 20 years ago or even 30 years ago. No one used to mention it. Now it seems to be a lot of people are talking about it. Like, we're living longer, we're much more healthier. It's a great place to be at the moment, where we're living in the 21st century. But I guess what you're trying to say is, we all get stressed in life. If you have anything that you need that's inside you, or anything that you feel that you need to share with someone, talk.
Absolutely. Yeah, holding it in will manifest in many different ways. So what I found is stressful things like holding on to resentment, feeling wronged. You know, if you hold on to that for long enough, it causes continuous stress. And quite often with people with cancer, strokes and heart attacks, I've asked them, is there anything that's been stressing you more than average for the last 12 months? And people that have had strokes, heart attacks and cancer can answer that question straight away. I've never found an exception to that rule.
Why is that the case?
Well, the stress response, I think, is the first thing that we need to understand. Our stress response is a result of a survival mechanism. So back in the Stone Age, if you happen to be having your evening tea and a Tyrannosaurus Rex suddenly turned up, you'd want the stress response because it's there for survival. You've got to run for your life, or you've got to fight for your life. And that's the stress response. It's designed to put the body in a state where we're ready to fight or flight for our lives. The problem is, as we've evolved as a species, our body, our brain hasn't learned to tell the difference between a real life and death situation. So if you're in a jungle and a lion turns up, you want a stress response. Good, that's a good time to get a stress response. But if your internet's slow and you're pressing the button, you'll get the same fight or flight stress response if it doesn't connect. So this day, the things that are causing stress are completely unrelated. It's not helpful to be able to want to run or fight for your life when you're sat at the keyboard. And if that's happening on a daily basis and people are thinking of stressful things, then it will impact people's physical health.
So what you're saying is being in a stressful situation is healthy because it stimulates your hormones that need to be stimulated. So if you're in a fight response, either fight or you flight, you know, you shadow. So do you think that that's the reason why then people, you know, like these sort of adventurous experiences, you know, like skydiving, like, you know, shark cage, or like I want to, yeah, you know, touch a crocodile and take a photo and post it on Facebook and show everyone. But it's a very sort of, you know, that fight or, you know, very stressful kind of situation, but where it gives you, you know, just an amazing experience. Do you think that's on the rise, that people actually do want experiences where it just stimulates, you know, a great experience for them?
I think we've always been that way. And you just look at roller coasters now, Monty, you know, they're getting more scary. There's bigger drops and more things happening on them. You know, people do like that adrenaline rush. You know, I did bungee jumping once myself. Once was enough, quite honestly. And I did skydiving once, and once was enough. So having been there and done it, I understand why people would do it, but I'm not necessarily queuing up to do it again myself now.
Yeah, I did it once as well, and I don't think I'll do that again. But so is there any sort of like, you know, sometimes people, you know, they could be a little bit down and they think, actually, you know what, this weekend, I want to do something to really get my energy back, feel alive like I used to. Any activities, like as a stress management coach, you would recommend that people should do?
Well, for me personally, the one that resonates the most is walking. Because having worked in the medical field and seen, looked after ex-athletes, there's certain sports that have a very high impact and have big physical damage. So the people most at risk are road runners, and squash players, because it's very high impact on the knees. So what I was seeing quite a lot was middle-aged men and women that were super fit, but their knees were shot to pieces. So the difference between physical, mental health, or you can be physically fit but not necessarily healthy, and you can be healthy but not necessarily fit. So knowing the difference between fitness and health is really critical.
All right, so you recommend something as simple as walking. Walking is a great way of just, you know, just stimulating good things and getting rid of the sort of the negativity that you're feeling of just, you know, general life.
Absolutely, and not only that, getting out in nature, that's been proved to lower stress levels. Walking, it's a physical exercise, so you'll naturally reduce things like your blood sugar problems. So it's good for people who are suffering with things like diabetes. It helps regulate because the body's naturally exercising, and because it's so low impact on the knees that you can do it continuously without having to worry about that same long-term damage as if you're going full out. I mean, you were probably lucky being a spin bowler and not having those big run-ups, so it's probably less impact on you, Monty, I would have thought. That was a wise choice.
Yeah, I guess I made a good decision there. You know, be a spin bowler, you got more chance of playing, you know, longevity of your career will be very fruitful. So yeah, that's it's really interesting, you know, how people talk about stress. What would you say are the, why are we getting more stressful now, even though we're living longer?
That's a really good question, and I studied this at length as a nurse, because the question I used to get when people had had heart attacks, I used to hear it a lot. They'd come in and so many people said there was no warning. There was no warning to this. Suddenly, you know, one day I had a heart attack. And I explored this. I thought, surely there must be warnings. And I explored it, and there is warnings. People just don't realise that they're warning signs. The two biggest indicators of people at risk of long-term stress and a breakdown, a meltdown, cancer, strokes, heart disease, there's two things that cause people daily stress. One is being stuck in a job that they hate. So it could be, it almost happened to me working in the city as a banker. You could, the longer you stay there, the bigger incentives get. You get a mortgage subsidy, you save more money, and there reaches a point in people's lives where they can't afford to leave. So they might have a bullying boss, they might have things going on that are causing them stress at work, but they are just stuck. They cannot afford to do anything about it. So they don't speak up, they're living with it, sleeplessness, eating problems will come as long-term thoughts about being stuck or trapped in a horrible job. And the second thing is relationships. You know, people get caught in marriages where they can't afford to leave, or they stay together for the children, or they stay together because they can't afford to leave. And that's a daily stress. That's waking up with a Tyrannosaurus in your bedroom, pretty much. So, I mean, if anybody's getting sleeplessness, that's natural. Your body's trying to keep you alive, but it doesn't realize that, you know, you can sleep without being, you're having your life immediately threatened. So they're two big indicators.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about that dinosaur. I don't know how to pronounce that word. Tyrannosaurus rex. I actually did take a picture with one during the London parade. So that's an interesting way of looking at it. You know, when you're in a stressful situation, you poke out the window and there's a dinosaur, a Tyrannosaurus. Well, you say it. How do you say it?
I think a T-Rex is probably the best
one. T-Rex,
Tyrannosaurus.
We'll keep it as a T-Rex waking up to. How does life, or how does the mind look like when there's no stress?
Well, that's where meditation comes in, mindfulness. There's a lot of practices, and, you know, having taken myself, I did it once. I was in Thailand when the tsunami hit, and a few days later, I decided to check in for a silent meditation retreat. And for me, and the first time doing it, it was like 8 days of torture before I realized why silence of the mind and disconnecting from everything around you is important. The mind is like a hamster wheel. And coming out of society, it doesn't stop the wheel. It still has the momentum. So it took me 8 days for that momentum to slow down enough to actually understand the benefits of meditation. And there's huge benefits to breathing. Deep breathing slows down. It causes all sorts of calm. Your breath, your breathing is your access route to sanity or stress, whichever way you want to play it.
That's really interesting how you talked about the mind being like a hamster wheel, and then the breathing, which is another focal point of, if you're feeling stressed, you know, focus on your breathing. These are like simple exercises, but if you've had a couple of weeks where you've been very stressful, even though you take yourself out of that situation, you're still saying that the mind is still running, and you need to do mindful activities to slow it down.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some things that you just need time, Monty. I mean, if you've been in a long-term relationship that's just broken up, you know, you're not going to be able to go for a meditation and come out laughing at the end of it. You know, sometimes things have to run their course, and these suggestions, they're just tools to help you to stay a little bit saner through that process. So, you know, there's no sort of instant thing. You know, if you've lost the death of a loved one, a family member, someone like that, you know, you have to have time. You are going to be stressed. You're going to go through your process, and it's not my job as a coach to rush that process. You know, it's to meet people where they are and offer them tools to help them get to the other end a bit faster and safer than they would left unmanaged.
Oh, great.
Home away from home. This is Punjab Radio on 558 AM.
You're listening to Punjab Radio on 558 AM, and I have my special guest, second special guest today, is Adam Shaw, who is a stress management coach and is a big advocate on the 60 minutes, that will only be 30 minutes left of the match, 60-second delay, where it's just raising that sort of mental health awareness to get people to understand, where at one point we were talking about when people are under stress, how people behave, and how does the body, how does the mind, how does your relationships, how are they when you're not under stress. We were trying to compare the two differences, but also then sometimes people have to have the difficulty of a lost one. They have to go through that grieving process. How do you sort of get out of that, because it's like layering the onions, and how can you like sort of help someone to get out of that grieving process?
Well, my experience of things like that, Monty, is that there's not really much I can say to get people out of that. But as their friend or as a coach, whatever the context it is that I'm meeting people, you just have to be there. You just have to be there and wait for them. You know, a friend, you'll wait for them, they'll get out of it eventually. But when they're ready to talk, just be there. Or to let them know if they're not talking at that point, just say, look, when you're ready, I know you're not ready now, but when you're ready, pick up the phone, let's talk through these things. And sometimes just being with people, you don't have to say anything, you don't have to motivate them. And quite honestly, if somebody's just lost somebody close to them, the last thing you want is some motivational speaker telling you, you can be like me. I mean, you just want to break their nose, really. It's like, you've got to pace and lead it. You've got to meet people where they are, and you have to hold their hand and hope that they're ready to come out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, because I think presence, of just being in someone's presence or knowing that mentally they're there for you, is more than enough. Like, you don't have to, you know, go through the a detailed sort of conversation about your emotions, your thoughts, how you're feeling right now, and just being there, you know, as a presence is more than enough, because that kind of just naturally just helps. You know, the people who are in maybe a bit more of a stressful situation, grieving, yeah, many different things. So presence, would you say?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, if you just wait, people will fix themselves. Everybody has the capacity to fix themselves. And as a coach, you know, a lot of coaches think it's what they do that does it. And of course, you're a facilitator as a coach, you know, we're a conduit. But the ultimate goal for coaching with stress is to wait for people to fix themselves, because if they think that it's me that's fixed them, they'll be dependent on that. And you know, you really want to give people the tools that they can at least identify the symptoms and start taking steps to move themselves out if it happens again in the future.
Yeah, I guess that's a sign of a good coach or a good mentor, is that they give you the tools and then they say, look, I've given you everything that you've got now. And same thing with parenting, with life coaches, even friends or whatever, that good people just give you the skills, and then it's up to you whenever you know you need it, whenever you need to that requirement is there, like when you're cooking and you think, I need that extra salt, I need a bit more sugar in this. Yeah. They've given you everything, you know, to cope with life. But you've actually developed a really interesting network in central London called the Fun Networking Club. And you've kind of identified, which I found it really interesting, that people are more engaged online than offline.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I see so many, especially of the younger generation coming in, and they're networking, and mid-conversation they'll pull out a phone and start checking it. And I'm looking unbelievably on the situation and thinking, you know, these people have travelled. You know, some of them have travelled from different ends of the country, and you know, if they had your phone number, they'd have more access to you than they have physically being there. You know, maybe you should just give me your phone number and I'll phone you in the same room if I want your attention, because I know you're going to answer your phone before you're going to engage people that are there right in front of you.
Yeah, that's actually hilarious, you know. I hope this doesn't happen at your Fun Networking Club, where other end of the room, I'm giving Adam a call. I said, Adam, yeah, I'm in the room, but let's have a conversation over the phone.
It feels like that sometimes, Monty, but I encourage people not to answer their phones, especially for the first half of the event, because otherwise, I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but if I've travelled in from Hertfordshire to meet someone in London, and midway through our conversation they pull out their phone, then I'm not thinking very good things about where this conversation's going.
We're in this culture of tech. It's the tech culture, isn't it? I've seen it with young children. If they, you know, you've had a long day, you just put the iPad on, put their favourite cartoon, and I don't think that's healthy. Like, I don't think it's healthy that people have so much interaction on the smartphone, and there needs to be more sort of, like they say, neck top interaction, then laptop interaction, and how do you, like, you're obviously trying to, you've got a fun networking club where, like I said, you're developing more sort of necktop interaction.
Yeah, well, that's what we want, Monty, because people buy people, and when people are like each other, they like each other. So during our events, rather than this whole horrendous what do you do, it's more a case of, you know, tell something interesting about yourself that not a lot of people know. And people connect over strangest of things. I mean, I had one event a couple of weeks ago, funnily enough, and the topic of out-of-body experiences came up. At that event, there were two people that had never met each other before. They're now working together. So he's found an employee based on one night of talking about out-of-body experiences. You know, that was the foundation of this new relationship. And, you know, people are interested in certain things, and a lot of people come into business network with their business head on. They're not being themselves. They're talking about a business that they don't have any passion for a lot of the time, and they're not engaging people. They're not even asking my name sometimes before just saying, what do you do? It's almost like almost like Tinder of networking. Oh, yeah, you're a consultant. No, I don't want to even know your name. What do you do? It can feel that way sometimes. So I just wanted to make the process a bit more personal. And not only that, offer an outlet that goes way beyond a business network. Sometimes people just want to come in. They want to talk. They've got stuff on their mind. And you don't know who in the room is going through that same issue. And what I found is that the synergy in that environment, it always links in. It always gives people value. They always leave having felt that they've had a good event, whether they've got leads or not.
Yeah, I guess what you're trying to develop is more human interaction, more of the sort of asking, at least ask the name. Like, they may not be of any network, but that human interaction is what you're emphasizing more on. And just, you know, I remember when I came to your event, you got me singing as a pitch, and it did get everyone's attention, and it worked.
Yeah, well, you saw how the room completely changed. I mean, I wasn't ready for that, Monty. I mean, you're the first person ever to do a singing pitch, so that was a first for my events. But I love the fact that it can do that. I never know what to expect, and I'm always encouraging people to be creative and to stand out from the crowd. And one thing's for certain, you definitely stood out in the crowd. If you sing your pitch, then it will stand out from the crowd, definitely.
Yes, I remember singing that pitch. And, but it's going through that day, I think you have this ability where you get, when you're in that environment at the fun networking club, where you're able to tap into the person's creativity and bring it out in that space of hour or two, and people kind of feel like, wow, this is a different networking club to where I've been before, where actually my creative thoughts, you know, certain parts of me that I wasn't able to be like that in a workplace, I'm able to be here. And because you sort of set the scene, don't you, in your workshops?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to give people a space to find their commonalities. So it might be, we might have questions like, if you have to start up a new startup business and you can have any three people alive on the planet as part of your team, who are you picking and why?
Who would be yours?
That's a really good question. I came to the conclusion that possibly Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and the Dalai Lama would be a very, very good combination for, you know, big change on the planet.
I must say, you do look like, let's say, the British version of a Dalai Lama.
I'm more like the Dalai Lama. No. Yeah, I mean, I've got great time for what he's done, and obviously, you know, his journey and what he's doing, and people changing the planet, and we are ruining the planet, and we do need to take it a bit more seriously now. And I do think that we've shortchanged the next generation, and it's our duty now to do something productive to actually help.
Yeah, because if anybody wants to be, you know, part of the fun networking, you know, club, I highly recommend to come and join it, because Adam Shaw is a tall guy. He has this very sort of, he has presence, but also he has a fun side to him. He has a slightly firm side, and he just has this ability to make you creative. You know, in a world where we live, everything is structured, systematic, logical. We're moving away from the human interaction through creativity. Adam just has like this ability to make you feel creative, like me. You know, got me singing for a pitch. Like, and what other stuff do you do to get people to be creative?
That's a really good question, Monty. I think if you put creative people together, as you well know, and you give them something creative to think about, then it's like putting a popcorn in a microwave. You know, I just sit back and I'm watching the pops go all around. There's nothing more satisfying for me as an event facilitator than to facilitate people talking about the things that they truly love. And when people talk about what they love, their whole energy changes. And this business nonsense head that most people come in with, talking about our bespoke business, we have been set up for 50 years. Now, when I start hearing all of this nonsense, I just switch off straight away. I'd rather people just turned up and said, look, I'm having a bit of a rough day today, you know, and I just don't want to talk business. I just want to turn up and have a conversation about football or something. And for me, that human aspect of it, that always stands out, because everybody in business networking is turning up with the same 60-second pitch. Some people are better than others, but I ask a question, you know, how many one-minute pitches that you've ever heard can you remember now? And I think of the hundreds, maybe thousands of times I've asked that, maybe two or three people have mentioned one or two pitches. So the point is, the 60-second pitch is almost pointless.
Punjab Radio is my favourite because they play wicked Punjabi songs.
You're listening to Punjab Radio at 5:58 a.m. And I have, my special guest or stress management coach. I think I'm going to call him creative coach from now on. Adam Shaw with me, who kind of said that if you can be creative, it actually, you find a light bulb moment, or you find the gold that you're looking for in your life far more quicker than actually being very logical and systematic, you know, in a corporate sort of language that we speak. It's interesting that you said that. You know, it's very interesting that it's easier to find a light bulb moment by being creative. And why is being creative so important for the mind?
I think because creativity, Monty, takes you to new places and uncharted territory. You know, anyone that's going to change anything has to start with creativity. You have to start seeing the world differently to everybody else on the planet, almost. You know, the people that change things, the first people that go in and do something new. I mean, there's 7 billion people that haven't thought about this. And it can be a very lonely place on your own, wondering, is this something that's going to change the world? Or am I wasting my time? Is this an indulgence?
See, one thing fascinates me. I was in India, and they've got, you know, they've got like new highways. They've got 3 lanes. It's all, you know, very organized. That road is very systematic, but the traffic is like 6 lanes on 3 lanes. But they all seem to cope with the chaos. They all seem to be so happy. We've had high, you know, profile athletes go to India, go to the subcontinent, and they go, people with not so much are so happy. They don't seem to understand that. Like, why are people so happy? How do you find happiness in life?
That's a good question. I believe that the search for happiness is the route to unhappiness. Because from a Buddhist perspective, when I was at the meditation retreat, I say, if you're looking for happiness in everything, it's an addiction. And, you know, you can't have happiness without unhappiness. And the goal is really to find a Zen space in the middle, which would probably make you a little bit like a Vulcan, and I'm not sure I'd want to hang out with that person that's achieved that degree of enlightenment, don't get me wrong. Probably not the person I'd want to go out with in the pub, but nonetheless, I think that is what the problem is, that we're just not trained to be on our own or to meditate or to be self-sufficient and to look within ourselves for our own answers. And I think that's really at the root of all of the problems that we have.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I was in India for a couple of weeks, and people would ask, you know, why do people, when they first enter India, they just see everyone being happy. Everyone's happy. There's so much chaos. Within the chaos, everything happens. And we live in the Western world that everything needs to be organized, structure. If there's anything that is, you know, unchaotic and it's like not organized, we have a panic. You go to India, you're like, yeah, it's chaos everywhere, and they just get on with everything. Now, that is creativity at its highest degree. How do you develop a mindset that can deal with chaos and also deal with when things are not organized and still, you know, manage that?
Well, that's really the school of hard knocks, Monty. You know, I think we've got to be there a few times and be battered around a bit and then come out the other end, review it and develop new strategies. I don't think it's realistic to expect people to deal with stuff like that for the first time and come out of it seamlessly at the end. So we're all learning and we're all evolving. You know, even me as a stress expert, I'm still learning, you know, always evolving, always open to new things, always looking to find new solutions to old problems that people have. And to go back to your India thing, because I experienced a very similar thing when I was in Asia, Africa, and South America. And what I found is that countries or areas where there's less money, there's less financial backup, that there's better community. And, you know, especially when I was staying in Rio de Janeiro with my friend, who was on the border of the favelas.
More offline people.
Yeah, absolutely. And these guys, they couldn't walk down the road without having about 7 or 8 conversations. Now, I don't know what it's like for you, but in London or where I live, I mean, people don't even know their neighbours sometimes. I mean, these guys know the whole neighbourhood. And, you know, even though they're going on hard times, they don't have much money, there's that sense of community. And I think community building is what's needed the most right now. In this tech world of disconnect and online presence, we need to build up real communities, especially in the first world countries where that's getting lost now, I believe.
And I think that's what the Fun Networking Club really is. It's like developing a community within central London, but also helping people with the challenges and the goals that they face in the environment that we're in, you know, in central London, pitching business, being a successful business person in London, but with a sense of community.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it goes beyond just business things. You know, we've even had weddings, funerals, we've had support networks, we've had crisis, and, you know, it never ceases to amaze me the extra yards that some of the members will go to help out the others. And there's a lot of selfless intervention, there's a lot of help, there's a lot of mentoring. I think mentoring is really critical. And looking to bring in, say, my generation with a much younger out of university generation, now, there's a lot of value to be added there from both ends, because I'm finding that mentors are getting a lot out of mentoring, giving that back. You know, they've been there, they've done that. Now they want to share, you know, part of their journey and leave a sustainable legacy. And the easiest way to do that is to mentor somebody from the next generation.
And mentoring is a difficult task. First of all, you need to have a clear sort of understanding about yourself. And secondly, people want to gravitate towards you. And everybody wants to gravitate towards Adam during the networking event because they feel like you have the answers. And could that get stressful for you at times?
Actually, probably stressful if there's too many and they're waiting for too long, Monty. But no, it doesn't stress me. I mean, I love crowds. I love people. I just love facilitating events, and I try and make them as inclusive as I can. I try and involve other people. I try and speak less so that everyone else can just get on and do what they want to do, and put them together, put creative people together, give them a conversation starter, and then just watch the magic unfold.
Yeah, because like some of the greatest coaches I've been under, likes of Duncan Fletcher, was a great observer. Very good observer. He wouldn't talk to me for 2 days. I thought he hated me. But he would watch me, how I'm developing, how I'm learning, and then just say a valuable comment, and it will go a long way. And I always respected him, always one of the best coaches I've ever came across. He was a really good observer, and that's what you as a facilitator do, or as a parent, or as a coach, or as whatever. You tend to sort of watch them, you know, just give them the freedom to play while facilitating that space.
Yeah, and that's really what it's about, Monty, because ultimately, you know, I want this business network to grow, and in order for that to do, it can't just be about me. It's got to be about a system in place that will work for anyone, and the less I get involved now, the more sustainable the business model becomes. So I've deliberately tried to be less involved in my own network during the actual event themselves. So I'm there looking for people to want to be there, to enjoy connecting with other people, and to just ask questions, just ask them questions to help them to grow and develop as people.
Yeah, so that's a very difficult thing to do, because we, as people, we all love our voice. We love to speak, and our voice needs to be heard. We love hearing our own voice. That's why I'm a radio presenter.
Yeah.
Because I like, you know, hearing my own voice on radio. But for you to sort of then take the back seat, it gives the opportunity for, let's say, the popcorns that are firing to actually develop while you watch it all. How did you develop that skill?
I think it's just happened. It's the life journey that I've taken has led me to this point. This time 10 years ago, I just wanted to get on as many stages. I wanted to do all the speaking. I wanted to be the center of attention. I wanted to develop my speaking skills. I wanted to get on stages. I wanted to spread my word, my message. And I've done that a little bit, but where I'm finding it's more rewarding is to help other people to spread their message as well. And so that my message can be that you've got to keep it brief. You've got to be very concise when you're meeting people for the first time, because most people in a networking will vomit information indefinitely. And they're not passionate about it, they're not engaging people, and they're not getting any results at the end of it. So I've studied this, and it fascinates me. And the less I say, the more I see.
Interesting. That's one way of looking at it. I guess that's one way Duncan Fletcher looked at it. He didn't say much. We gave him the opportunity to see more. And all great coaches, I think great leaders, they have this ability, like when they speak, everyone listens and it's very meaningful. But when they don't need to speak, they're very good observers, very good listeners. They're able to see things. And that's what they have a command. They have a command and have a right presence, like Adam Shaw does. So how do people get involved with the Fun Networking event?
Well, thanks for asking that question, Monty. Look up Fun Business Network. It runs every week in London. Contact me directly. My email's adam@adamshaw.com, that's shaw.co. Get in touch with me. Visit my website, or ask you, and you can point them in the right direction, Monty.
So what is it? Adam Shaw at...
adam@adamshaw.co.
Adam at...
Adam Shaw.
.co.
Yeah, there's no M or UK or anything. No, it's just a .co.
Okay, so the first one is Adam, then you have the at sign.
Yeah.
Then you have Adam Shaw as just one word.
Yeah.
.co. That's the one. There you go. So, you know, if any listeners tuning in, they may want to just write it down. I've sort of broken that email address down for you.
Oh, star, Monty. Well, in case there was any doubt in anyone's minds, they'll now know. And everybody's welcome. The first event's free. Come and see it and see for yourself whether it's for you or not.
And if they want to speak to you directly, is there an opportunity for that?
Absolutely. get in touch with me. We'll arrange a phone call. Happy to do that. I speak to a lot of people, or I can meet you before the event.
Are you happy to give your number? Or
is yeah, that, absolutely. 079-44-311-700.
079-44-311-700. There you go. So if anybody wants to get in touch with Adam Shaw, stress management coach, advocate on healthy living, human interaction, offline people, I think he's a lovely human being. He's really understands the sense of community, how important that is, gets you away from your mobile phones, and what will be your one piece of advice going into 2020?
Well, I think this time is to, if there's anyone in your life that's given you stress on a long-term regular basis, then you need to start considering unplugging. And when you disconnect from the people that are stressing you, doors open to other people and the magic starts to happen. So I'd say focus on people that make you feel good. Focus on doing things that feel good. Focus on stuff that brings you alive. Because if you're doing stuff that doesn't make you feel alive, you're going to get stressed, you're going to get ill, and it's not going to get any better.
Well, that's great words from Adam Shaw. You know, that's, I think that started my 2020 campaign.